5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm John McGlosh for the WDMA, and we're going to be talking about marketing today and testing today. So hang on to the end. I think the best stuff is always at the end, if you can stand it. And give it a like, give it a share. Podcasts are available every day, except not lately, not this last week, but there's hundreds of them out there. So you can find out about all kinds of marketing topics, and you can just flip to the middle. I do that with some of the podcasts I listen to. Go in about 10 minutes and you'll get to the meat every day, delivered to your phone. Anyway, let's get on with it. First, I want to talk about this Heinz commercial. I've been trying to talk about this for literally months, but I got into the commercials for the Christmas holidays and all that stuff. So I'll read it to you because it's music playing, so I'll give you that, okay? It says, people love Heinz a lot. And then it shows a tattoo, a lot of tattoos. But when it comes, it has to be Heinz, it has to be just right. The Heinz tattoo label. And they made a label that's reversed so you can peel it off the bottle if you're good at that and put it on your skin and somehow transfer that ink to your skin and then start on the tattoo. Heinz love should never fade away. It has to be Heinz. Now, I do have my Mint Mobile. I'm not quite as committed to Mint Mobile as I am to ketchup. Well, it doesn't have to be Heinz, but I think we almost always buy Heinz. And it's, you know, no regrets switching to Mint Mobile. I promised to do that last summer when I was wearing short sleeve shirts. I've got to do it. I mean, I've got to at least put on the tattoo stencil, right? And I'm not promising to get a tattoo with Ryan Reynolds, but let's get over to the story here. If this isn't love, what is? Heinz ketchup has some serious fans, serious enough to want to instantly. to want an instantly recognizable logo tattooed on their body forever. Okay, and so they decided to do a Heinz tattoo label, a peelable label that doubles as a stencil that can be used by tattoo artists or anybody else who wants to do Heinz art, I suppose. When we found out there were people all over the world with Heinz tattoos, I did actually Google Heinz tattoo and found lots of pictures. We took one of our most distinctive brand assets, the label, and turned it into a way of celebrating and inspiring our fans' irrational love. Now, wouldn't this be a great way to find out, you know, find the customers who love you and get more like them, right? There's one, of course, differentiating feature. The ones who really, really like you and are willing to get a tattoo and have a Heinz tattoo. How do we find those? Well, in this case, they're offering a sweepstakes. So they're only creating 100 specially designed labels via the sweepstakes. On the a contrast with that is that Mint Mobile sent this to me, no charge, for fun, in a mailer. Okay, I would suggest that this was a really wasted opportunity. At least give everybody who enters the sweepstakes one of the labels. You don't have to give them a bottle of ketchup, but at least give them the label. What is this? How much could this cost? All right, it costs nothing. My goodness. And then at least you could get data on who the tattooed fans were, where they lived, and see if it correlated with Heinz sales at all. This is the way you utilize data. But as I point out in my book, the I love you variable is notoriously elusive, right? It's not easy to figure out why some customers will buy from you 10 times a year and others, the vast majority, only buy from you once. Same product, same more or less demographic. Why do some people love it and some people not love it? It's really hard to say. Why do I love certain brands and not others? Land's End, as an example, is my Land's End. I like their elastic in their turtleneck. I can get a large turtleneck and also a nice neck that fits me. Nothing else is any good. Nowhere else do I buy turtlenecks. That's because of their product, right? They also have good customer service. I sent back a sport coat that never was quite right, and they gave me full credit as far as they could tell, because it was like a decade since they'd offered that particular model. Okay, so I'm not advocating this, but I am saying that they missed an opportunity to identify the I love you fans. Would have been a and maybe we should run it again, I would say. You know, I called out Quad the other day after getting the news that they were closing their Sacramento plant, and a VP from Quad reached out to me yesterday. So I'm excited about the idea of chatting with them. As I said, I would meet even on my own expense, go to Sussex, Wisconsin, although this particular guy is in Minneapolis. Okay, so earlier in the week, Mark Ritson said, "Are we witnessing the end of the CMO? No, and stop asking." Okay, and I repositioned this a little bit so it would be more dramatic for him. He right off the bat references, he says, "No, they're not. Stop talking about this." I like this intro, though. "My New Year's resolution was to avoid reading U.S. business press because its marketing coverage is so hyper-real and crap, it defies belief." Okay, but I was fiddling with my phone, and whammo, I stumbled upon Fortune's website and a downpour of cliched horseshit that soiled me. So there was an article about Fortune 500 companies eliminating the chief marketing officer roles as the position loses C-suite clout. And, you know, we heard on the flameless stove, or whatever it was called, that little stove was a great, looked like a great stove. Stove gasification, and the Snoop Dogg commercial the other day, and I'm trying to remember the name of that stove, dang it. But the former CMO did connect with me at my invitation, and I haven't heard back what they thought of my comments about the CFO is taking over the marketing responsibilities, or the COO. Or somebody like that. I'm not sure whether that it's a permanent thing that they're eliminating their CMO, or they just didn't like the results. I think it was the flat growth, which is kind of Ritson's point, okay? But he says the next day there was another article called "The CMOs Regaining the Faith of Their Bosses, Survey Shows." Okay? So Mark says, which is it? Here's Fortune saying the CMO role is dead. Forbes says the CMO role is revitalized. Well, it's two different magazines, at least. First of all, this obsession with the CMO role is crazy. But, you know, there's so many marketing magazines and so many business magazines. It is crazy. "The firing of the CEO tells us nothing except that they probably weren't very good at their job." Okay. And I would also like to note, back when I was learning about CFOs, when I was a VP of marketing, I don't think we even had a CFO or a CMO or even a CEO. I think we had a president and we had a couple of vice presidents. So, you know, was I the CMO? Kind of, I guess, sort of, mostly. But anyway, I was the VP of marketing. and the VP of finance kept always teasing me because my projections were not quite on the button. I remember, I think I did the projections for about 10 years, and six of those years were plus or minus 5% for marketing for the year. That's pretty good. I think three or four of those years were plus or minus 2%. That's like dead on bullseye for marketing. But I was very threatened by that. I was hurt that I couldn't do better. And I kept working on making those projections better, and sometimes they were. But I think it was after I left, I realized that the CFO handles data from the past, handles already spent money right? Mostly, and then decides what to spend more on. So the balance sheet always adds up, assets, liabilities, and the P&L always adds up, revenue, expenses, etc. So their numbers always work out, but they're shuffling an already dealt hand. What marketing is doing is betting the river, in a manner of speaking. We're trying to predict the future. So, of course, the CMO is a job that's it's much more difficult, even if you're good at marketing, right? Just to communicate that with the CFO and the CEO, why aren't your numbers better? You know? And the irony, of course, in my career has been that if your numbers are great, they sell the company. If your numbers are terrible, they sell the company. Or they fire the CMO or whatever. But, you know, it's a really, really difficult spot because the future is uncertain. No matter how much data you get, it's always historical. It's always easier working with the historical data. So I want you to appreciate that, Mark. The other thing I want to call out here is that he says that this article says that the autonomous role of CMO is gone away. And this is the article. And I spent more time on this actually than the other because I thought it was a very good article. And it's just said that these three CMOs are fired. It didn't necessarily say that they were redefining their company, though several did say they were going to get rid of CMOs. But the article went on and said it's not that the CMO roles are going the way of the dodo. Okay, the CMOs are still very present. In fact, 71% of Fortune 500 companies, that's a pretty good sample set, still have a chief marketing officer. It's down from 74%, but that's almost insignificant, over 15 years, right? Okay. And Stefan Mayer, a professor of management at Columbia Business School, said, today's executive has to be much more of a generalist. So, and there's a bunch of stuff. But the fading, here's the firing of those three CMOs, Ritson says, was used as evidence of the fading of the prominence as an of marketing's prominence as an autonomous C-suite discipline. But that's not what they said. They said that it seemed to be fading, but it was probably evidence that CEOs have little marketing background themselves. Only 10% of Fortune 250s have any significant marketing experience, and only 4% of the Fortune 250 had a CMO-like role. 70% of Fortune 100 CEOs have operations or finance. Exactly what I've been saying. So this Fortune article is right on the button. Only 41 of the Fortune 1000 have a marketer on their board. Okay, it isn't that marketers are irrelevant. It's that finance runs the company, period. Finance runs companies. You want to be a CEO, right? You want to be a board of directors member? Don't be in marketing. I gave a talk once at one of the local colleges, and one of the kids asked, well, what's a career in marketing like? I said, you're never in charge of the money. You're always reporting to middle management, you're always treated as middle management. And that is true. And those few that have someone on the board are consumer brands like Best Buy, Mattel, Nike, Estee Lauder, and Crocs. Okay? Excellent article, actually. When people say, is what this first thing says, when people say, oh, the CMO is being eliminated, it simply means a company has chosen to structure around the role in a different way, which is actually pretty much exactly, this is from Richard Sanderson, what Mark Ritson is saying. So to call out this article as stupid, I think is really, but McDonald's replaced their CMO. It turns out marketing chiefs might be essential after all. I'm not sure if the CMO has that much meaning, but I do know And I would like to take issue with Ritson here that I think he misread the article. And then he spends a lot of time on CMO tenure and says, you know, on average, this was funny. The average marketer has one testicle and one ovary. What does that tell you? There's a lot of men and women in marketing. Okay. Like and share. Your friends will know you're smart. Bye-bye.